They're not going to beat us down no more. They're not going to burn us down no more. They're not going to shoot us down no more. Because if they do, we're going to do what Mike did. We're coming at them with everything we got. And I'm saying to consolidate it right now. We got to do any more burying in the graveyard. They better get out their shovels. Because we're through taking punches. You don't win a fight taking a punch. Nobody ever won a fight taking a punch. And you see what that says? This ain't a bunch of letters like any other union. It says fist. And that's what we are. Every guy in here, a fist. One fist. One fist. One fist. What are you? What are you?
Metzger, Terrible Tommy at P.O. Box 1687, San Jacinto, California, 92583. You tired of taking a punch? Nobody want to fight taking a punch? That was from the great film Fist, F-I-S-T, with Sylvester Stallone. If you've never seen it, you should watch it a few times. Back in the 20s, 30s, 40s, and even the 50s, when white working men were battling it out in the street with the company goons for an 8-hour day and a decent job. Yeah. They knew how to get what they wanted back then. I don't know whether the caliber of white people today can handle it. You know, people have sent me a certain amount of footage from rioting, looting going on down there in Florida during the hurricane. You know, I never saw anything on regular television. Never saw anything on the networks about it. Did you? No, of course not. So you know where they're coming from. Of course, you knew that before. Did you hear any politicians talking about it? Did you hear Mr. Trump talking about it? Looting in the streets and the stores? No, you didn't hear it, did you? That's the kind of people that have power over you. Time to get rid of them. Get rid of them. Got a nice letter from Richard Scutari yesterday. He's doing pretty well considering the situation. And he's at a prison, U.S. prison, Mendota, California. And I looked it up on the map yesterday, and it's not that far from me, about 100 miles. So we're getting set up to get a visit. I think I'll just take a bus up there and put my feet up on the back and read my book and glide through the countryside. How about that? But first I got to get permission to go see him. You know, two badasses like us, they might not want us to get together. Might start a revolution. Who knows? Here's another little clip from that movie Fist I wanted you to hear. After bumping heads for quite several weeks, the big shot owner of the company decides to meet with Stallone and the union head. And so they invite him up to this mahogany tabled room and all that kind of stuff. And the following is quite interesting.
Sorry, gentlemen. Some of these meetings, you know, they go on. Why don't you move down here? Perhaps we can hear each other better.
No, we can hear fine unless you guys want to come down here.
Oh, I think we can hear just fine. Okay. Shall we begin?
This is Mr. Monahan, the president of the local. How do you do, sir?
Mr. Novak.
Kovac, chief organizer.
All right, Mr. Kovac, what can we do for you?
Well, Mike, here's the president. I guess he knows better than me, so why don't you lay it out for him, Mike?
Okay.
Certainly, Mr. Munn.
The thing of it is, Mr. Talbot, the men in our local are upset about a few things, and, well, we wanted to talk them over with you.
I'm always willing to discuss our men's problems. I want the men to be happy.
Well, the way the men see it, the company ought to pay for the medical bills when any guy gets hurt and set up some kind of an insurance plan for the family.
How do we stand on that?
Our policy's the same as that of the other companies. We don't have our own insurance program, but as you know, we have on occasion lent some of the men money at standard rates for medical emergencies.
Some of the men have already expressed their appreciation to me personally, Wynn.
Very nice.
I was thinking, Mr. Talbot, not of your lending the money, but of paying the bills.
We're to cut them off, pal, you know that?
What did he say?
I said we're going to cut them off. Your balls.
And what exactly do you mean by that crudity, Mr. Kovac?
I mean we're going to shut you down.
I see.
No, you don't see. You don't see nothing. You guys don't hear nothing. You don't feel nothing. Because if you did, we wouldn't be sitting here. You're out of touch. I'll tell you what you're suffering from. Small eyes and fat asses.
Is he speaking for you, Mr. Monahan?
Johnny's our organizer. He knows what the men want.
Well, I think I've heard enough.
No, you haven't heard enough. Now, damn it, if a guy works overtime, why don't you pay him overtime? If he needs insurance, why don't you give him insurance? We don't like to come up here begging. We're not asking for charity. We're not asking you to be generous. We're just asking you to be smart businessmen.
I see. Well, the answer is no, Mr. Kovac. No insurance. No overtime. No pay raises.
Let's go, Mike.
Where did all the white men like that go? Used to take them on in the streets and battle them with baseball bats and even with guns. Where'd they all go? I guess they're all dead and they haven't been replaced. When I was back there in Indiana, they came up with this right-to-work law. I went through that way back in the 60s with Douglas Aircraft when they wanted to get that in there and break the union. So I know all about that. And they voted that in Indiana because they said, well, then everybody will come here and there'll be plenty of jobs. Well, yeah. Cheap jobs, lower wages, lower hourly wages. And still companies were going broke. And you know who these guys were? Back then it was Republicans. Still today, right? And people don't like to hear that. That's the way it was. Those big shots were all Republicans. But yet the working class guys are... I know how rotten the Democrat Party is, but they should have kept a hold of it and kept the weirdos out. Because clinging around to the Republican Party is not going to get you anywhere. Trump's proving that every day. Everything he said he wanted to do, he's going to do. He's turning around. And which that's exactly what I told you would happen. You don't see masses of white working guys climbing up the steps of the state houses or even into these TV stations and shutting them down. You don't see anything like that. Everybody's cowered down. Everybody's cowered down. In the streets, the blacks got more balls than the whites. Yeah. Even the mestizos. They're coming on strong. What's Whitey do? He votes for Trump. Trump votes for war. Trump votes for millions of dollars or billions of dollars in war material to be shipped all over the world to have leadership change and all that kind of bullshit. Pretty soon we'll be sending guys over there to Korea and in Far East again. How many times does that take? World War II was bad enough, and then comes along the Korean War and then the Vietnam War. How many more times does it take before you tell those bastards, forget it, I ain't going no place? But they've still got a lot of that right-wing nonsense going to defend our country because the communists are coming. Your enemies are right here. They always have been. Well, I see Hillary wrote a new book. Blaming everybody for everything. All her problems. All her millions of dollars in her corporations and her groups around. She's got a fortune. She don't need to work. She don't need to run for anything. She's going to make a fortune on this book. Crying about everybody. Well, of course they were out to get her. Anybody who's running for office has got hundreds, maybe thousands, maybe millions of people out to get him. That's the name of the game. Trump had him out to get him, that's for sure. So when you lose, like when I lost for Congress and U.S. Senate, I didn't sit around and cry about it. I expected it anyhow. But that's not the way you play the game. And now what's the Democrat Party going to do, man? It's been pretty much taken over by non-whites, mestizos, Negroes, and all that stuff. And a few mixed up white people, white working people, but they've lost a hell of a lot because they've chased them over into the Republican Party, which is another trap. But as far as Hillary, hell, they're all the same. They're all just as bad. It's just she became the focal point. And all these Republicans and these conservative, these so-called right-wingers and all of them, they're all the same, man. I mean, they differ somewhat, but it's all the same bullshit. They think bullshit is going to get them everywhere, and usually does, quite a few of them. Well, it got Hillary and her husband millions, maybe billions. And, yeah. Mr. Clinton goes over to that island, has sex with little kids, I guess. I don't know. That's what I heard. Maybe just a Republican rumor. I don't know. They're perverts all over the place among the politicians. And probably, you know, the guys, the preachers that open up the Senate and the Congress in the morning, they're probably half of them child molesters. So what's your problem? It's top to the bottom, man. Here it is. I think Russia's cleaner than our country. Yeah. But Putin's a damn KGB guy. You know, that's like going after an FBI agent for president. Would you vote for an FBI agent? No way. KGB agent, forget that. But it is funny to watch them fuck up. I love it. I love it when they squabble, fight, and call each other names, all these politicians and so forth. I love that. That's the only time they can give us a little rest. You know that? I wish it was like the old days when the guys in the Congress carried canes and went in there and they got pissed off. They whacked a guy over the head. Yeah, that happened a lot. And they had duels, too. Yeah, I like that. I want them to open up dueling again. That would be great. You know, also on these hurricanes, my daddy taught me when I was a little boy. He said, Tommy, never build a house in a low ground. Never build a house too close to a river or a creek or even a ditch. You got to have elevation. Don't live in those areas of the country. Don't live there. These people are learning what they should have known all along. They're in denial. So now they're all yelling, it's global warming, going to blame somebody. Well, this has been going on for thousands of years. Down in South America, around the Amazon, the natives have got enough brains to build houses up on stilts, 20 feet off the ground. They have the Amazon floods all the time, but their houses never get swept away. Of course, that'd be too much to ask of the modern American person. So anybody that buys low-lying land, and I'll tell you one thing, the property exporters, deporters, or whatever, I forget the name, but anyhow, they always want to buy cheap land, and usually it's bad land. I know back in Indiana where I was, well, no, this was in Fallbrook, California. They bought cheap, low land to build their schools on. They do that all the time. And somebody makes a hell of a lot of money selling really bad land to the developers, and they build schools and stuff on them. And then when the rains come, whoa, Katie bar the door shut. I predict Houston and New Orleans, people better just start getting out of there permanently. Go to higher ground. Because this is going to be a continued situation, probably every year. And the idiots that built their refineries down there in Houston, they're going to have a problem, and you're going to have a problem buying gas. It's going to go on and on and on. So we got weather change. Well, if you're smart, you know how to avoid problems. If you're not, you're going to drown. You see all those lines of people waiting on freebies down there? Almost all niggers. Almost all those lines waiting for help. Because that's the kind of race the nigger race is. They're always waiting for the handout, for the white masses to take care of them. You know? That's been going on since who knows when. When all those Negroes ran out of New Orleans and went over, they bust them over to Houston. The last time, now the niggers out over to Houston are getting flooded out in Houston. Maybe a few of them had enough brains to get totally out of the way and away from the coast, but not many. Because the Negroes are not going to move that far away from white business, where there's money to be made, and they can get some of it off the white man. Yeah, they're going to follow him wherever he goes. Hell, they're up there in Alaska. Follow him. And that's the thing. If the white man goes to Mars, the niggers will soon be right behind. At one time, as a small kid, I lived about 20 miles, maybe 30 miles or so, northeast of Tampa. And I sat through one of those hurricanes one time. And that was not a bad one, but it was pretty bad. The trees coming down all over the place. I saw lakes pouring into lakes. There was a whole string of dry lakes. And the water come down like a roaring. And I heard the frogs one night. The frogs, like a million frogs croaking. The frogs are trying to escape because when one lake would fill up, the next lake would fill up. And finally, the lake filled up right to our back door at a business we had and lived in. The day before, it was total sand for a half a mile behind us, dry bed. But during the night, this kind of stuff happened, like a hurricane, all the water came down. So, you got to make plans ahead of time, like my daddy used to say. Remember a developer down near Fallbrook, where I lived for 40-some years. There's a river runs through just south of town. But it's mostly dry most of the time. Runs San Luis Rey River out to the, runs out to Oceanside, California. And most of the time it's dry. Well, they had the what they called a 100-year flood. And that thing got as wide as the Mississippi River. And this guy, the developer, built these houses right down there in that floodplain, and they got wrecked big time. They almost all got floated away. And they had a flood there one time on that river that took a railroad train or parts of a railroad train all the way out to the Pacific Ocean in Oceanside. Talk about power, the power of water. You got to watch out for that, baby. What is it? Most of Florida is only about 3 feet above the water level. When I was down, you go dig down into the ground and dig 2 or 3 feet, and you were in coral and in water. that state sooner or later is just going to go below the water level, period. With Hurricane Irma safely out of the state, most Floridians will be able to return home today. They better just kept right on driving. But it will be an uncomfortable homecoming because three-quarters of the state is still without power. Electricity isn't just a convenience in the Sunshine State. It's a necessity in the summer when the heat can turn deadly hot. Believe me, I've been there when it was deadly hot. Especially when you get over towards the center of the state. And that's just what it... if you don't have enough money to live right on the coast, you got a problem. And that's just what it's forecast to do this week, with temperatures expected to reach 90s. And that's humid 90s. The bad news is that an estimated 15 million Floridians are still without power. And officials say it could take 10 days or more for it to be fully restored. Well, if you think that's trouble, you ought to be over there in Cuba. They really got flattened over there, and I'm sure their services aren't as good as in Florida, at least. Actually, I think global warming's great for our side, for the white working class, that are smart and know how to get out of the way. I think global warming's going to flush out a lot of the problems we've got, because a good share of our problems are along the coast of the country in the big cities, and most of the big cities are very vulnerable to these floods and hurricanes and tornadoes and stuff like that. So I don't think you're going to have to worry about too much as time goes on. I think Mother Nature's going to do a hell of a lot of work for us. Now, you got to be careful, because you can get caught into it too, but still, generally, and on the big side, Mother Nature's going to kick ass and take names. I used to say, God hates Houston, or God hates Miami, but I think Mother Nature's, she's a hater, and I like her because she's a hater. She is a great hater, and she doesn't care what you pray to. She's going to kick your ass. Well, at least it looks like they'll be getting ready for the tourist season down in Florida and just go about their business like nothing happened. Wonder what happened to all those Yiddish mamas down there in Miami and up the coast there. Well, they must have had limousines coming in from New York to pick them up. Well, I see the Supreme Court is allowing Mr. Trump administration to maintain its restrictive policies on refugees, probably just on the white ones. The justices on Tuesday agreed to an administration request to block a lower court ruling that would have eased the refugee ban. Wow. The administration request to block a lower court ruling that would have eased the refugee ban and allowed up to 24,000 refugees to enter the country before the end of October. 24,000, we've already got millions have come in. The order was not the court's last word on the travel policy that President Donald Trump first rolled out. This is all bullshit. The justices are scheduled to hear arguments on October 10th. On the legality of bans on travelers from six mostly Muslim countries and refugees anywhere in the world. They're going to let them in. I mean, they're in Indiana, where I was living, and Fort Wayne was 50 miles away from me. They had thousands of Somalians, these greasy niggers from Africa, Somalia. Thousands of them were there. They're dropping the State Department of the United States is the most criminal area of the government. They're dropping these bastards everywhere, especially every close to white city they can find. They're dumping this crap. And I don't see hardly any resistance at all. Well, I wouldn't want to be called a racist or a white supremacist, or God, if they called me a Nazi, I'd die, man. I'll tell you, my pastor wouldn't talk to me. My wife wouldn't talk to me. She'd leave me and take the kids. Yeah, that's the way it would be. I can't say anything. I'd get kicked out of my Lions Club or the Rotary or even Joe's Bar. Fucking cowards. I mean, it is really an insult to have to live within a society that has become so cowardly. So cowardly, it's unbearable.
Session, and that could include a decision on President Trump's controversial travel ban. The court usually saves their most important decisions for their final day. Meantime, there are rumors swirling that Justice Anthony Kennedy could announce his retirement. Kennedy is 80 years old. He's considered the so-called swing vote on the court. If he retires, President Trump could make an appointment that would create a conservative majority.
And President,
as far back as Jefferson, Thomas Jefferson, when he said, the Supreme Court is nine old men who can decide anything means anything. It never changed, except now we've got some Jews and women on there. And mostly Jewish women. That can decide anything means anything.
John Batchelor Show. Before Columbus. Way before Columbus. New discovery. Eastern Siberia. 24,000 years ago. Brown hair. Brown eyes, freckled skin, the DNA of this young man, Malta is where he's found near Lake Baikal, leads to speculation about first Americans, and the mixing of Europeans and Asians and what we call Native Americans. Nicholas Wade, writing for the New York Times, looking at this study, it's extremely exciting and has to do with DNA, which is the ultimate tool for the detectives of our ancestors. Nicholas, a very good evening to you. They find DNA in Malta and in Lake Baikal, and they're able to tell us what the young man looked like. Is that correct? And they can tell his size, all of that?
Yes, they know the genes that are specified, skin color and also hair and the color of the eyes. So from those genes, of course, nothing of his skin and hair remains. But from his genes, they can infer that he probably had, as you said, brown hair, brown eyes.
I'm struck by the fact that he was buried quite ceremonially under a stone slab. He was wearing an ivory diadem, bead necklace, bird-shaped pendant. That says this is high culture. This is sophisticated culture, almost what you'd have to say mourning culture.
Yes, and I guess it points to the fact that he might have carried high rank. He certainly seems to have had a very special burial. And the Venus figurines, of course, are very interesting because they are very similar to the Venus figurines found in Europe about 20,000-30,000 years ago. And yet here they're turning up on Lake Baikal, you know, thousands of miles to the east.
Now, the DNA trail is more confounding, because what you're looking at here is that he contained DNA, and I want you to define what kind of DNA, mitochondrial or the other kind. He contained DNA that suggests both European influence and influence of the that comes to North America, but not Asian influence. Is that correct?
That's right. It was a mixture of between European genes and those found in Native Americans, but separate from East Asians. The interpretation the scientists are putting on it is that if you look at the ancestors of the Native American population who were in Siberia at the time, first they must have separated from the East Asian population and sort of you develop their own evolutionary characteristics. Then they must have interbred with Europeans who were there at the time. And from there, this mixed culture, this mixed European, East Asian group would have walked out along the Beringian land bridge that then connected Siberia to Alaska, because it was the height of the Ice Age and the sea level is much lower than it is now.
This is a period that's known as the Last Glacial Maximum. Is it significant that Europeans of the Upper Paleolithic would have been that far east? Is that a new fact?
Yes, it is a new fact. Now, we'd had these Venus figurines before, so archaeologists had sort of remarked on the strange similarity between the Malta culture and those and the cultures of Europe.
We've talked before, Nicholas, about the emigration across from the land bridge from Asia to North America, through Alaska, down through Canada to North America. I believe the last time we talked, we've determined that it's in waves. Is this new information helpful for that wave interpretation, different times for different migrations?
Yes and no. And the yes in that it should, so in principle, give us a handle on the date. But I think knowing that we need a lot more ancient genomes to be studied from the Siberian area, so we can get a better handle on the source population for Native Americans. And this mixed population that lived at Malta at least 24,000 years ago, it must have, before the population itself disappeared, it must have given rise to the ancestors of Native Americans who did get across the land bridge, but we don't really know when it happened. How it does sort of support those who have said all along, this is a very sort of fraught, disputed area, that Native Americans, that a wave of Native Americans must have arrived here before the Clovis culture 13,000 years ago, which for a long time was thought to be the very earliest settlement of the Americas.
Now, here are the two puzzles that are extremely compelling. One is that the skulls of Native Americans from a long time ago, you mentioned the Kennewick Man, is different from the present-day population of skulls of Native Americans. What's the significance of that?
One possible interpretation is that there was a strong European admixture in the population that got across. So if the population had both East Asian and European elements, then you might expect a variety of skull types. Another explanation is what they call genetic drift, which simply means that there are sort of random changes between the generations, and many sort of genes can change or go extinct just because of the random way in which parents pass on some of their genes and not others. So it could have been simply because of genetic drift that the skull type of Native American populations has changed a lot between, say, 10,000 years ago, or a Kennewick Man, I think, is 7,000, and the present day.
And the one that most compelling, the Ninos, the Pinto, the Santa Maria of 20,000 years ago. What is that image of people coming from Europe in boats to Canada?
Right. It does seem a little far-fetched. I mean, that is the hypothesis some people advance to explain the presence of this mitochondrial DNA lineage called Lineage X in Native Americans. So Native Americans have five lineages, A, B, C, D, and X. So the A, B, C, D are sort of perfectly understandable, and they're sort of unique to the Americas. But the X is a puzzle because you also find X in Europe. So the explanation that you mentioned is that, well, people of 20,000 years ago, you know, somehow got into little boats, and crossed the Atlantic. I mean, it wouldn't have been a straight open water crossing. They probably would have sort of hugged the coastlines, which
right.
then were sort of very different from how they are today. But still, there's no other evidence for this great feat of navigation. The people 20,000 years ago in Europe were into hunting reindeer, and there's no evidence that they were big on boats. So that's why it's very satisfying to now have this alternative explanation that there was a European sort of injection into the North America along with the East Asian one, and in that European component, you could have had the X lineage arrive.
Fascinating to consider. This is early globalization, Nicholas, that we're looking at a period of time where it was very cold. You called it the last glacial maximum. So there wasn't much land anywhere. Wasn't the ice sheet all the way down to Ohio at this point, or even lower?
That's right. It's a real bad time, and that makes me always be much more worried about global cooling than global warming, because so much of Europe and America is uninhabitable. But there do seem to have been sort of pockets where people sort of hung out in the extreme north, and the Lake Baikal region appears to have been one of them. But for the most part, the population, certainly in Europe, was sort of pressed down into Spain and Italy and the Ukraine, and the whole of England, for example, is just totally covered in ice.
This does look to shatter, finally, the Clovis culture being the earliest. I mean, this moves it back up to 10,000 years earlier.
Yes, I think that's right. And there have been sort of several strong hints of earlier arrivals, and all these events that have sort of occurred at the 24,000 mark for the Malta culture. So, as you say, they're sort of pushing back the likelihood. So it may well have been several waves of immigrants, the earliest sort of starting 20,000 years ago.
They want more information. From where? From Lake Baikal? From North America? They want more DNA.
Yes, they want to study the source population. So this means you need a much better understanding of the population history of Siberia, which is where the source population must have emerged from. So they've got essentially just two skeletons now, that the two reported in this Nature article today, and now they need to search for a lot more. So one way, the easiest place to search, of course, is in museum collections. But the trouble is many of the skeletons already excavated, before anyone knew of how important ancient DNA was, or that it even existed, was retrievable, have been contaminated by the fingerprints of the hundreds of people who've touched them. And so it's very difficult, if you've got a lot of present DNA in the bones, it's very hard to distinguish that from the ancient DNA, which is much more broken up and fragmented. But you really need sort of pure bone that no one has ever touched. So if you can't find, once you've done raiding the museum collections, then you need to go out and do more digging.
Nicholas Wade for the New York Times. 24,000 years ago, a 3 or 4 year old brown-haired, brown-eyed, freckled-skinned young man, and clues to the settling of North America way pre-Columbus. I'm John Batchelor. This is Collins' wonderful, comprehensive discussion of the 10th century, the moment that there is evidence that the knitting together of the disparate broken pieces of the Carolingian Empire from Charlemagne and his sons start to organize themselves distinctive from the Eastern Empire of the Roman remains. This is the birth of the West. We are in the United States of America, and Paul Collins, who is in Australia, products of the Western creation, Western Europe. But there was a moment, there were times, there was one emperor and his coronation, where you can say this is a different world from what existed before. However, not to spend all of our time discussing the kings and the emperors and the court intrigue in Byzantium and the court intrigue in Rome and in the moving capital of Otto the First, Second, and Third, Paul has much attention for common folk, both the monks and the nuns and their abbots and abbesses, and also how they lived, how the freemen lived and the serfs lived. Paul, we continue with the story of the monks and the nuns. You feature in particular a man named Saxon Gottschalk, who lived in the 9th century. This is before the birth of the West. He was an oblatio puerorum. What is that? What did that mean about how the church came to have Saxon Gottschalk?
Well, John, essentially what happened was that parents, particularly noble parents, would bring their children, sometimes their second and third children, usually the second and third children, bring them to the monastery or to the nunnery, to the convent, and offer them there as oblations to God. The model of that comes, of course, from the Hebrew scriptures, from the Old Testament, where Samuel is presented in the temple by his mother. So they are presented, if you like, to God by and the monastery, the monastic community represents God. They're presented there as oblations to God. Well, that was all very fine for the parents, but for the children, if they didn't fit into monastic life, it was a bit of a problem because they were essentially committed by their parents for life to a life of celibacy, to a life of obedience, and to a life of poverty. While the monastery might well have offered them real security, the difficulty was that if they weren't well adapted to a monastic life, then things could be very, very difficult for them. And one of the prime examples of that is the man you mentioned, Gottschalk, a Saxon, as you say. He was offered to the monastery as a child, probably somewhere between the age of six or seven, or around that age. And he found, as he grew to adulthood, that the monastery wasn't the place for him, and his whole life really became a struggle with monastic life. And I think it's a highly dramatic life. And the great thing about him is, of course, he was a fine poet. And he and his friend, a man named Walafrid Strabo, who was the abbot of Reichenau, which is in Lake Constance on the Swiss-German border, they developed a very deep and a very loving friendship, and they exchanged poetry. And so you have this dramatic life of Gottschalk struggling with monastic existence and writing poetry and doing theology as a way of escaping from it in lots of ways.
There is a suggestion in his resentment of having been pledged by his parents when he was a child for this life that it was done to deprive him of his inheritance. Is that possible?
Well, yes, it is possible. We're not sure if he was a first or a second child. If he was a first child, well, he would have been deprived of his inheritance as a Saxon noble, but that's not likely. But what he would have got would, of course, been land, and land, of course, meant wealth, even if he was a second or third child. But that was his great claim, and he demanded, of course, when the parents handed the child over, they also handed over the wealth, money, well, not so much money.
Well, we're not interested in all that minutiae of back in the 10th century. I thought we were going to work into the development of the West. But no soap. We'll go on from there. Let's go back to this short article I dug out of Liberty Bell called Horse Sense. Our racial history begins when Aryan warriors astride their steeds rode out of the misty dark of an unrecoverable past, and the destiny of our race was indissolubly dependent on horses in both war and peace until the cavalry was relegated to an auxiliary function in the First World War and the horse was completely superseded in all his services by the total mechanization that accompanied the suicide of the West. Now, this is from 1986. It is no wonder that the early Aryans attributed to their horses a quasi-magical power that had in it something of divinity. That is apparent in our religion from the certain rite in India, the great sacrifice, which could be performed only by Kakrakvadian, a universal emperor, whose authority is solemnized and sanctioned to the horses sacred to Odin and Freya among the Norse, and the sacrifices in which the magic of the Vingal clearly reflected a belief that they underlay the Indian rite. It is also no wonder that we Aryans are fond of our horses, and that no zoologist can convince us that our favorite horse is not fond of us. We feel a particular indignation at cruelty to horses, and it would be for us a profanation to eat the meat of such a noble animal. We are unashamedly sentimental about horses. The Ballad of the Early West celebrates a cowboy who caught a field in a blizzard, almost reached home, but was found with his hands frozen to the reins because he could not leave Old Dan. The years ago, when an actor who had attained some celebrity as a cowboy in the cinema sneered at people who became sentimental about horses, which are only dumb brutes and should be used like inanimate things without compunction, as he had used his, I was not greatly astonished when the late Jack Moffat, who knew everything about Hollywood, informed me that the actor belonged to the race which is obvious from the tales of the Jew book, instinctively dislikes horses and prefers asses. It is not a coincidence that among the peoples of the Semitic race, we feel the greatest affinity to the true Arabs of the desert, who loved their horses and had a code of chivalry, not greatly unlike ours. Horses naturally play a large part in the Arabian tradition, as in ours, and one Arabian tale of heroism has been enshrined in the luminous prose of Lafcadio Hearn's Rabia's Last Ride, unquote. Rabia, a renowned fighting man, alone held a pass against his enemies to protect the flight of his women to safety. He received his death wound but died on his horse, knowing that the marauders would fear to approach him too closely. Over the black desert of the sky slowly moved the long white caravan of the stars, and the night waned. But the dead Rabia still sat upon his mare, and the beautiful mare stood as a graven image standeth for the love of him. The Arabs developed one of the finest breeds of horses, and Arabians have always been prized highly. It is to the honor of our race that, although the horse is no longer pragmatically useful, we have retained, most of all in England, but also in this country, our inveterate liking for the animal who was our companion and faithful servant throughout our rise to greatness. Even when I was a boy, fine Arabians were bred for their own sake, and in recent years the breeding of Arabians has unfortunately also become a lucrative business for the rich. The March-April issue, 1986 issue of the handsome Aramco World Magazine was likely devoted to the Arabian horse and includes an article on the breeding of such horses in Europe and the United States. There is one significant report of the effect of environment on animals whose excellent qualities are, of course, genetically determined, as are the qualities of human beings, although the Christian liberal superstition blindly denies that obvious fact. Experts are coming to the conclusion that the very success of the Arabian in market terms is having a deleterious effect on horses. When wealthy owners lavish food and comfort on them to protect their investment, the horses that once lived on the Spartan food of the desert will lose the very qualities that distinguish them. There is also a likelihood that since owners who focus on their investment do not spend time with their horses and do not ride their mares at all, the Arabians, which have traditionally enjoyed and needed human companionship, will begin to lose their famous gentle dispositions and, of course, their loyalty to their masters. One needs only horse sense to see the analogy to and the lessons for our species of mammals. That's the end of that reading on horses. And this, Democracy or Aryan Spirit, the power of a repeated word or phrase to become a part of our mental process, is well known. Take the word democracy for an example. We hear it each day in the news broadcast, the telecast, and we read it in our newspapers and magazines. We have almost come to knee-jerk response expected of us, for most of the United States have come to feel the reigning deity in the heavens bestowed upon the United States a democracy. Nothing is further from the truth. The word democracy is to be found in neither the Declaration of Independence or in the Constitution of the United States. What was established for the separate states, once considered to be sovereign prior to the Internecine War, which ended in 1865 at Appomattox Courthouse, Virginia, was a republic. Briefly, the people were represented through their elected representatives in the House of Representatives and the Senate of the federal government. This is still the legal form of government. Now, what is all of the drivel about democracy? A democracy is an unwielding form of government in which each citizen and person deemed to be qualified to vote votes upon each issue facing that particular group or government. A democracy ensures the majority will prevail. If the majority of the electorate vote to ensure a white government, then a white government it will be. Now comes the deliberate obscuring of the meaning of the word, for we find democracy in some strange transformation has come to mean the protection of the minority over the majority. A complete reversal of the meaning of democracy. We've been told democracy means that the white majority must give way to the minorities which have unwisely been let in and allowed to flourish in the United States. We are told to have this precious democracy, we must forcibly integrate our schools, our places of recreation and worship, even our bedrooms, so that the downtrodden masses can share this wonderful country. If we did, in fact, have a democracy, would it not be appropriate to call the electorate to vote on such issues? The only such democratic device now prevalent in most states is the referendum. A referendum is a question or issue which appears on the ballot at an election, and the electorate is given the opportunity to decide the issue. There is a concerted effort in all the states to remove the referendum procedure, and then all matters will be decided by the elected representatives in the legislative session. How, you may ask, is it possible to continually use the term democracy to refer to a form of government and a principle soundly rejected by the Aryan founders of our country? It is the continued misuse of the word in all forms of the media, of information dissemination, as well as the deliberate lack of any meaningful course of historical instruction in the schools. History and government classes have, for the most part, been absorbed into a misty area known as social studies. The social studies classes are the primary vehicle of the brainwashing of grade school children. It is the social studies they learn of democracy as meaning the lack of any sort of intelligent decision concerning preservation of the Aryan race. They learn democracy does not mean a government of the majority, but is rather a government of the minority. Democracy dictates the highest academic level that is attainable by the lowest intelligence. Social studies tell them a communist fellow traveler and womanizer like Martin Luther King Jr. is more suitable for their study and admiration than the Aryan founders of our country. Democracy has come to mean just about anything the manipulators wish it to mean. We are with Alice in Wonderland, where meaning is given or taken away from a word or concept or at a whim of a despotic arbiter. Once we were all to have our quota of blacks, wetbacks, and so on, until it finally dawned upon the chosen ones that a quota system would be the end of their privileged position. Can you imagine a quota limiting the number of Jew lawyers and doctors, television, movie, news workers? The quota died. The only concept which it is not open to manipulation and distortion by the Zog mind control propagandists is that within each Aryan breast. The word meaning may vary from moment to moment. the ratio of downbreeds to Aryans will change from month to month. The avenging angel called AIDS will continue to strike, and the Aryan men and women will cleave to one another, forming pockets of sanity in a world of degeneracy. We will not trust to the power of the word, for we have the power of the spirit, the unbreakable bond of Aryan blood, our genetic treasure, which alone will see us through these days of cultural disintegration. The power of the purity of the Aryan blood will be the cleansing agent which will sweep aside all the deceptions and corruptions of the Jew and will leave us free, if we but let it, to face the future with the honest knowledge we shall, as a race, survive and prevail as followers of the Sigrunion, said, Mein Er heißt True. So be it with the Aryan today. Loyalty to our Aryan race, above all else, is our honor and our salvation. Democracy can descend back into the gutter from whence it emerged. And that's the end of that reading.
A very dull TV show about Auschwitz. More gruesome film clips and more puzzled intellectuals declaring their mystification over the systematic murder of millions. The reason why they can never answer the question, how could it possibly happen, is that it's the wrong question. Given what people are, the question is, why doesn't it happen more often? Of course it does, in subtler forms.
I have a little headache from this weather.
Oh. It's been ages since I sat in front of the TV, just changing channels to find something. You see, the whole culture, Nazis, deodorant salesmen, wrestlers, beauty contests, the talk shop. Can you imagine the level of a mind that watches wrestling? Huh? But the worst are the fundamentalist preachers, third-rate con men, telling the poor suckers that watch them that they speak for Jesus. And to please send in money. Money, money, money. If Jesus came back and saw what's going on in his name, he'd never stop throwing up.
What is the bloodlust? What is the bloodlust?
The bloodlust. Bloodlust. They say, all the men that I've read about, they say that the human animal is the only one that has bloodlust. Killing without purpose, killing for pleasure, you can see light through this.